In today's episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review Captain Phillips and Carrie. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We've not been quite weekly as of late. I'm going to take some responsibility for that. It wasn't just travelling, but I've been two big distractions for me. One was the Breaking Bad finale.
Oh, yes.
Amazing.
Did you watch it yesterday?
No.
Are you catching up?
Yeah, I'm going to start.
Oh, well, so we won't tell you about the end then.
No,
but you don't know what happened,
tell anyone
did you?
Anyway. Yeah. I don't think. But all I can say is, after like five or is it six seasons, what a perfect way to wrap up everything.
Is it a happy ending?
It's
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It's not sad.
It's
okay,
happy
good.
For some and unhappy for others.
Oh, stop.
No, I will say it's a satisfying ending.
Okay, good.
Everything comes together in the way that you expect it to. There aren't any left.
How can he live?
Literally no loose ends.
How can he live through six seasons of it when he's supposed to be dying of cancer?
You have to watch and find out.
Oh, maybe he got the miracle treatment. Okay.
But no, terrific stuff. The other reason I've been a little late in publishing was it's Grand Theft Auto 5, which came out.
All I can say is I was glad I was traveling because I wasn't a Grand Theft Auto 5 widow.
Yeah, it's just such an amazing game. I know this isn't Game Wallers, but honestly, some of the writing in that game, some of the characters, some of the plot story developments are on par with anything that Hollywood puts out. And what's interesting to me is that gaming in some ways has now surpassed Hollywood, because Grand Theft Auto took in its opening week over $1 billion, which is insane.
You sounded like Dr. Evil when you said that. Billion.
Yeah, it was. That's how crazy that is. It's the first game to actually break that in 1 week.
Really?
But yeah, $1 billion. It's hard to imagine that gaming is now more profitable than Hollywood. But
well, that's because each game costs what, $100?
Yeah, each game is like $50. Yeah,
oh, okay.
So it's true the takings
but
up,
still.
But still, in terms of the size of the industry, the game cost $250 million to make. So you can see the kind of budgets that they're putting into these things. But
although, when you think about it, considering how, you know, maybe the United States is the only place where people actually pay for, you know, legally getting games. I mean, most other places, people just download them illegally. So
yeah.
In spite of that, if they made $1 billion, good for them.
Yeah, terrific achievement. But honestly, it's I feel bad for anyone that doesn't game, because you won't be able to experience this. But anyway, terrific stuff. Let's go back to movies then. We're going to review Captain Phillips first, I guess. Yazdi, you want to give us the intro?
Directed by Paul Greengrass, who previously helmed United 93, Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum, and Green Zone, Captain Phillips is based on the very topical story of Somali pirates. The movie is based on the true story of the first American cargo ship to be hijacked in a very, very long time, almost a couple centuries. Tom Hanks plays the captain of the ship, Richard Phillips, who in 2009 went through a harrowing set of negotiations with the pirates to engender some manner of resolution. Catherine Keener and Barkhad Abdi co-star in a film that attempts to see the situation from both sides, not just from the side of Captain Phillips, but also the Somali pirates. I really want to see this movie. I almost saw it yesterday, but couldn't quite make it. I know the two of you attended a screening. I think the world of Paul Greengrass as a director, and so I'm curious to know what you guys thought.
Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks. How annoying it is to me that you're as good as you are at what you do, because this movie, I think, was it's a great Hanks vehicle, but he also did it so much justice in terms of his portrayal of this man. He wasn't necessarily depicted as heroic, but Hanks's portrayal of the character was really well done. I don't think the movie was very balanced if it was intending to give us the Somali pirate perspective, because I think it gave us some of their story, but it certainly didn't give me as much of their perspective. I wasn't necessarily sympathetic to them in the way that a movie that would portray it from both sides would be. I didn't like them very much, and they were clearly to me the bad guys, and I wanted them disposed of all the way through. And part of that was because Hanks made me feel his plight all the way through, the responsibility that he had, the burden that he had on his shoulders. So, you know, this is an amazing story and just a very, very solid film.
Did you read my notes? Okay, so for me, this isn't just a good story about, you know, the great Captain Phillips, which I think is very interesting because for anyone to have to go through that situation must be horrendous. I can't even imagine. But for me, I thought it was the journey of the Somali pirate Muse, which was actually the one who was...
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, which was actually the one who ended up being captured and is now serving time in jail. So I actually felt like it was that story that we were watching, and I thought this was tense and thrilling, and I really enjoyed this movie.
Wow. Tom Hanks has been kind of coasting for a few years. He, you know, he's been in movies which haven't really registered much on the radar. So it's good to see him back
Cloud
in
Atlas.
Form. And Larry Crown, which I happen to like a lot. Yes.
I mean, this is a long film. This is 2 hours and 14 minutes, but I didn't actually feel it, you know, compared to some other ones that we've watched, which are really, really long.
Yeah, I didn't think this was a long movie
at
all.
Yeah, 2 hours and 14 minutes.
Wow, the time passed by
very quickly, right? So that's a good testament to how watchable it is. And the other thing I came away thinking was, my God, these ships that carry containers are huge. And
cargo ships, yeah.
Yeah, they're humongous. And Joe, to echo what you were saying, I did like that they showed the Somali pirates as fearless, and it did feel a little bit like David and Goliath. Mm. It's amazing to me that these two-bit people who don't have all the technology that these huge ships have are able to actually pirate these ships. And although I understood why they do it, like you, I didn't feel sympathy for them. So it's a very much a David versus Goliath, but I'm not in the favor of the David in this case.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue with this Somali pirate story here was that they do what they do because their circumstances are dire. You know, Somalia is basically a lawless country. You know, there's a lot of... It's essentially ruled by gangs and thugs.
Warlords.
Right. And these really are the people who are sending out these pirates to go and capture these ships, you know, because you would think that it was alluded to in the movie that these people had already successfully pirated, you know, a ship before and come away with, you know, what would have been an absolute fortune in any terms. But in Somalia, that would have been, you know, life-changing money. But, you know, here they were still going out 100 miles into the ocean on a little dinghy trying to hijack a ship.
Yeah, so, with a pair of, like, flip-flops on, you know.
But, now, in terms of the filmmaking, I think, Rashmi, you made a great point about how enormous the ship felt and how sparsely staffed they are. It made a lot of, I thought, somewhat political statements in terms of, you know, how these people are sent out into these waters that are, you know, known to be perpetrated by pirates, and they have no way, they have no viable means of defense.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great quote in the trailer, which is, you know, start the fire hoses. Well, they're trying to repel people with guns, with, you know, basically water cannons, you know, it's and they're not even very directable. So it's amazing to me that more hijackings like this haven't happened. But I think in part the size of these ships has made it very difficult for anyone to actually climb up the sides to get on board. But yeah, just a great story about the man. I think there was some criticism in the media saying that he was portrayed as a hero here and that he felt that he wasn't necessarily the hero. I can see why he doesn't necessarily feel heroic, because he didn't swashbuckle or repel the pirates himself.
Well, and he didn't stop some people from being killed, inevitably.
But a very fair portrayal of him and what he did. And I still think he, by his actions alone, he did do the right.
He was a smart, clever.
He took all of the right steps.
Clever man.
You know, he did what the captain of the, you know, the Concordia cruise ship didn't do. You know, that guy just bailed the ship when he crashed into the rocks. This is the person that would have never done that. You know, he knew that as a captain, it was his responsibility to see it through.
Yeah, nothing more to say.
I just like that somebody greenlit a movie on a topic like this. You know, it's not the sexiest of things. And I presume it's hard to market this movie, but, you know, so close. This played out in late 2009.
Yeah.
And within 4 years or 3 years, we have a movie with a full script, you know, full recreation, all of it for us to watch in the cinemas. And I don't know, had it not been for Tom Hanks, if, you know, this movie had even played in the cinemas. So I like that, you know, somebody is looking outside the box and, you know, taking up topical issues to make movies about.
I was looking for that Danish one that we got to watch.
Hijacking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I was going to say, I mean, so we were lucky enough to watch a screener of the Danish film called A Hijacking, which is also based on this same concept where, you know, a Danish cargo ship gets hijacked by Somali pirates. And that was actually more violent, I would say. It was a good story. It was actually more about the negotiation, I think. And that was interesting. So if you're interested in this topic, do check that film out as well.
Yeah, that's a movie I watched with one eye open. Rashmi was watching the screener. I chose not to pay attention to it. But I did get the sense that that movie was more about the success of the hijacking in terms of, you know, these guys really exerted their control. Whereas in this movie, Captain Phillips' actions rarely puts them in a position of controlling the situation. They're always on a lower footing.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So wind this one up, Joe.
A terrific movie. It was tense. Paul Greengrass's direction, I think, was really at the heart of how well paced this movie was. It got straight into business. There was no, you know, extensive backstory about this person and his family and his wife and his life and his kids, and it's like straight into business. But you got enough of what you needed to know about the man prior to getting on the boat. So, and then the pace and the stakes are consistently raised all the way until the end. And it's really hard almost to take a breath until the situation is resolved.
Till the credits run.
Yeah. So, you know, the pacing and the tension and the drama are all very perfectly judged. It's not overly dramatic. It's not, you know, it's not incredible. It's in the sense of not being credible. It's just very, almost a documentary style type of filmmaking. 8 out of 10.
Well made, well acted, film worth watching. 8 out of 10.
Will it get a best movie nomination? Possibly.
I think there's a best actor nomination in here, again, annoyingly, because Hanks is so solidly good in this.
I like the actor who played Muse. He might get a best supporting.
Yeah, Barkhadakti, there's been a lot of press about him.
He was the one I was actually most impressed with.
He had never acted before.
Yeah.
I was listening to another podcast. It's the Commode and Mayo podcast about this movie. And one of the things that they interviewed Hanks and Paul Greengrass, one of the things that they did to heighten the tension on set was, because Hanks is such a big star and you're bringing in a bunch of unknown actors, it's really hard for them to hold their own against him. So one of the things that they did to kind of keep everyone feeling real was, until they shot the hijacking moment in the movie, the actors hadn't actually met.
Interacted with each other.
They were kept completely separate. There were separate setup meetings. There were separate production meetings. The first time that they meet each other face to face is the point of the hijacking. So they tried to capture some of that. And, you know, Paul Greengrass is an extraordinary filmmaker. I think he really put a lot of thought into how to deliver this story accurately. And that's just one of the little things that he did.
Wow. Yeah, and I love that every single movie he's made, bar none, is on the face of it an action thriller, but it's always so politically charged.
It's human, and they're human stories.
And it's so morally complex, and it's so topical. You know, everyone, United 93, and the Bourne movies, and, you know, Green Zone even.
It was very good, very good.
Good stuff.
Yes, go see this one, Yazdi. I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay. Speaking of movies you enjoy.
Oh, dear.
Or not. Let's move on to our next one.
Which is Carrie.
So this is based on the novel by Stephen King, and this is a reimagining of the classic horror tale about Carrie White, a shy girl outcast by her peers and sheltered by her deeply religious mother, who unleashes telekinetic terror on her small town after being pushed too far at her senior prom. So this is directed by Kimberly Pierce and written by Lawrence D. Cohen, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, and, of course, the Stephen King, you know. And it stars Chloe Grace Moretz and Julianne Moore, amongst others. So I have to ask Yazdi first, because he's the non-horror lover. Yazdi, what did you think of Carrie?
One word. Meh. Do you want me to say more?
No.
please elaborate on the meh. Have you seen the original?
I have. You know, so
and were you a fan of it?
Is anyone a fan of that film? I don't.
Is anyone not?
Well, you know,
I'm not a fan of it, but I cannot forget it since the time I've seen it. It's it it's, you know, it's imprinted on you know, in my brain. I mean, I think when Stephen King wrote this book, you know, he wrote it as like a cheeky literalism of, you know, high school is horror, you know, of how literally high school is horror. And since then, unfortunately, there have been, including the original 1976 version, brilliantly made by Brian De Palma, you know, there have been so many films, you know, about the cruel, murderous space, you know, of high school politics. I mean, there have been so many movies, you know, Heathers and Brick and Mean Girls and Clueless, and the list is literally endless, that now to make a remake of this movie just seems pointless. It's oddly, you know, it's toothless.
I agree with you, Yazdi. I mean, I'd start by saying, you know, for those of us that don't love horrors, it's never a good sign when a film starts with a blood-curdling scream and the credits are still running. So I was kind of like, ooh, this is going to be great. And my new love of horror, I'm kind of going in with fresh eyes. But that said, don't worry, because the film isn't half as scary as it should have been. And therein lies the problem. It was, why is the question? I mean, you know, it just didn't add anything. And I think, you know, the three of us had spoken about this before, about how scary we had found the original Carrie. And I wonder if that's something to do with the fact that we were all so young when we watched the original, or that just in that 1970s type of filming, it was even more scary than what you can do now with CGI.
I mean, I was under 10 years old when I saw the original Carrie, and I was...
We were laughing,
laughing about this, but, you know, one of the themes of the movie is, you know, Carrie basically comes of age in the shower and, you know, has a period in front of other people. And I don't think this is a terrible spoiler, or is it a spoiler?
No, it's not.
Because everyone knows the story of Carrie. I didn't even know what was happening in that when I first saw the movie. I didn't know. I wasn't... mature enough, I hadn't been to sex ed or anything like that, so I didn't even get that theme. And
then hadn't had one, and so I thought that I was scared I would get powers like that when I got one, and so that made me even more scared to mature.
But nonetheless, despite the fact that I was very young, it was a very powerful movie.
Yeah.
It was very, and I don't know that I've seen it as an adult. I mean, maybe I saw it one time in college, but I haven't seen it for at least, you know, 10-15 years. Nonetheless, this movie was too exact a remake. Mm-hmm. I think that was my biggest disappointment. Was there was an opportunity here to reimagine the story in a way that would make it more relevant, and the only thing that they seemed to do was, you know, there was a video shot of the bullying incident that got posted online, but that was the only modernization of the theme. The you know, we talk about anachronisms, but you know, the mother has this 1970s car and they live in this place. Well, that echoed the first movie a little too much. And some of the themes of the mother, I think, didn't feel right if, you know, now that it wasn't the 1970s, now that it is, you know, 40 years later. So that all felt wrong to me. And, you know, meh is probably a really good way to describe the movie, because it didn't significantly add to anything that the original movie had achieved. And unlike the Evil Dead remake, which
so good
took the original movie, which was already over the top, and then pushed the boundaries so far beyond where the original movie ended that it ended up being a worthwhile, fun experience as a moviegoer. This just used the same beats, and one review I actually read of it said a lot of the same shots were used in this movie as in the original. So it just felt like a pointless remake.
Yeah, I mean, the movie kind of resurfaces all of the same, you know, arguments about the need and the value for remaking an iconic film. I mean, Brian De Palma's 1976 movie is such a distinct piece of work, with images, like I said, which are literally seared into the mind.
Brain,
you know, seared into your mind, that it seems like a futile exercise to try and create something that will stand up well besides it. And, you know, I mean, just that image of a blood-soaked Carrie standing in front of the flames, you know, with the flames behind her, it is one of the most defining images in all of cinema history.
Yes.
And so unless you're going to do something starkly different, like you said, Joe, then what's the motivation for a remake? I mean, Joe Wright did an adaptation of Anna Karenina last year where he did so many things differently, stylistically, visually, that it becomes something fresh and new. But this movie does not do anything different. And like you right. said, there is this little bit about the video. I think the movie, this remake, does overplay some of the religious themes related to Carrie's mother than the original did. But even that seems kind of doesn't go anywhere because, you know, there's this piece where Carrie's thrown into a closet and she sees, you know, there's all this religious iconography and Jesus's eyes start, there's blood which starts coming out from Jesus. What does it mean? It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just there for no reason.
And then I also thought, you know, and it's not like you can fault the acting because I think Julianne Moore did a good job with what she was given. I think Chloe Grace Moretz did an okay job with what she was given. Again, I say it again, you know, I think she's in fear of being typecast.
Totally.
But there's a scene in the movie where, you know, you see Julianne Moore inflicting pain on herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to be a great theme. Correct. That would be an amazing theme to explore with this. But it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, a lot of opportunities left on the table. But
I mean, I think, mind you, if somebody goes into this completely unaware of the past, you know, history of Carrie, I think this is a reasonably well-made movie. It's not inept. It's not insulting. So I think it's only in relation to what we already know about the original that right. it doesn't hold up so well. And I'm not defending the remake in any way, but I'm just stating that. Yeah.
One area where I think the movie did take a huge misstep, other than missing opportunities, was in the casting of Chloe Moretz as Carrie. Because the original Sissy Spacek Carrie was a very meek, you know, she was a very bullyable character. You know, she was the girl that got picked on in school. Chloe Moretz is, A, too pretty, but also too feisty.
Because she's hit girl.
Right, she's hit girl in Kick-Ass. You know, she's held her own against vampires in Let Me In. And she's just this kind of strong, she's too strong a person, I think, for me to credibly believe that she was picked on in the way that she was. And I don't think she played it that well.
And,
I
mean, and she wasn't really picked on. There was only the shower scene.
Don't get me wrong, I love Chloe Moretz as an actress. She's done some fine work, but this, to me, just felt a little bit let's pretend. And I didn't believe her. I didn't buy this Carrie getting picked on.
Yeah, I mean, she's really starting to grate on me now. As an actor, I mean, this seemed to me the same role that she did in Let Me In. But even then, she had like two facial expressions in the movie. You know, honestly, yeah. she did. One of fear and one of anger. Those were she's either very fearful and cowering or she's angry and she's...
And you know, I buy the anger.
Yeah.
Boy, do I buy the anger.
So I really think she should stop. She should start playing roles much older than she is right now. She should really, you know, change path with her acting career because she's doing, more and more of the same thing. And even Julianne Moore, who I think the world of, I mean, she really doesn't have much to do. I mean, she does what she can with that role, but, you know, she really doesn't have much to do here. And, you can kind of also see the studio interference in the way with, you know, the last couple shots of the movie, which kind of over-explain things. And then the very last shot of a grave, which looked like it was from some cheesy, so stupid, like a cheesy, you know, 80s Halloween B-movie, a Halloween movie. I mean, what was that last shot in the movie? It totally didn't belong there.
Exactly. Yeah,
it felt more like...
I was so disappointed.
Yeah, it felt more like...
Beetlejuice.
Not even Beetlejuice.
Not even Beetlejuice, but like an Evil Dead type thing.
Right. Like a bad Evil Dead made for $10.
A B-movie Evil Dead,
Right.
Okay, let's score this one. Joe, you go first.
So, you know, not a total disappointment, but anyone that was interested in seeing this movie, I would direct them towards the original. Now, that's a very qualified statement because I haven't seen the original in years and it might be horrible. So, I would say... This movie isn't a total waste of time. It might be fun on Halloween, you know, when you're going to go out and have a little bit of fun and watch something very easy to watch. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10, and I think that's a little generous but I didn't think it was totally inept. It was just okay.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, so I mean, some of the issues which may have seemed shocking 30 years ago are not so anymore.
Mm.
And so the whole thing, you know, came off oddly tame to me, and I think it'll come off really tame to the current, you know, crowd of people who are watching horror movies. You know, they won't find anything in it to hold on to, even though, as I said earlier, this is a reasonably well-made movie. But for me, it just never comes to a full boil. And, you know, I hate to see good actors like Julianne Moore and Judy Greer being wasted. So I give it a tepid 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point, Yazdi. I mean, if you're the Insidious crowd or the Evil Dead crowd, this is just not going to be horrifying enough
it's
for
not scary.
You. And for those of us that, well, I kind of put myself in both camps now, but and for those of people that don't like horrors, there's not enough story to keep it grounded in reality. So my summing up is why it's yeah. not better than the original, and I give it a 5 out of 10.
It gets a meh and a why.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even... So it's fine. It's not an all-out horror movie, which is fine. It doesn't have to be a horror movie.
It but can then be, it should if, be psychological thriller.
Yeah. And you know, this whole thing, again, I hate to sound repetitive, but the whole thing about high school as mm-hmm. horror, just... We've seen this now already.
But yeah. it can be. And I think if done in the right way,
right.
you know, the high school environment is horrific for many people to go through. And I think that's the whole premise of Carrie. But... Again, I didn't buy it. Some of the plot points don't work anymore.
Just the aging like of the kids was weird. Like how you can compare a Chloe Moretz who looks like she's 12 to that mean girl who looks like she's 21 yeah. and they're supposed to be in the same class. It just didn't. And then the teacher.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about her.
So that's the
Judy Greer.
Yeah,
Judy Greer.
She's supposed to like a Saturday Night Live type person.
No, she was important to this.
But I agree. I mean, there were tonal inconsistencies in the movie. Like, you know, there is one part where, you know, after Carrie discovers her powers, you know, she uses, you know, her mom kind of confronts her and she uses those powers and kind of overpowers her mom and throws her in the closet. And then that's followed a few scenes later where, you know, her mom kind of gets on top of her physically and rides her. And then Carrie doesn't use any of her powers and she lets herself be tormented. So mm-hmm. it just seems so disconnected.
And she also seemed a little too in control of the powers. One of the things I really liked about the original Carrie was it didn't feel like she was very in control of her powers, which is why the scene at the end came out of pure rage. You know, she probably wouldn't have meant to. But this Carrie was very
vindictive.
Adept at,
She was very vindictive,
even to people who had been nice to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's she was also very able to control everything precisely.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. It's because she's been in Kick-Ass.
And I wanted more destruction. I mean, I know that Yazdi and Rashmi, you complain about movies ending up with, like, total destruction of, you know, the New York City at the end of the film. But the trailer for this movie, one of the early teaser trailers, has a depiction of the whole town basically being on fire with Carrie. I was like, great, they're going to take the original story and they turn it up to 11.
Mm.
And we didn't get that.
I must say, the very last act of the movie, though, is reasonably well filmed.
It's well filmed.
You know, yeah. I mean, the whole part with the cars and people, you yeah. know, she's going after the cars. And
But she can make the ground split. I mean...
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. that contradicts what I just said, but, you know... It didn't fit then. If she can make the ground split, then exactly. tear the town apart. I mean, you know, you destroy everything.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think. Mail at movieworlders.com, twitter.com/movieworlders, and facebook.com/movieworlders as well. Until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.